Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Let's Sleep On It, Reclaiming Parenthood, the podcast. And I'm your host, Taylor Kulik, a sleep and well-being specialist and occupational therapist. My mission with this podcast is to examine the parenting narratives that dominate our culture and grow together as parents. Here, we will talk about biological infant sleep, as well as many other parenting-related topics. And you'll also hear real empowering journeys from parents who are parenting against the grain. I hope that you walk away from each episode feeling inspired, empowered, and supported. Please remember that none of the information shared in this podcast is medical advice, and you should always speak with a trusted healthcare provider if you have any concerns. Let's dive into today's episode. So I have been searching for a clean electrolyte company that I love for a really long time, and I just hadn't found anything that I liked, that I enjoyed the taste of, that I felt good about the ingredients, until I found Element. And I actually got a sample from somebody, and I was instantly hooked. They have really good flavors. They're actually tasty. Like, I enjoy drinking them, whereas other brands that I've tried in the past, I really haven't enjoyed. And you can just put them straight into your water, and they're so good. So they have salt, magnesium, and potassium in them. And a lot of people don't realize how important electrolytes are for true hydration. A lot of us are chugging water because we're being told that we need more water, but we're not drinking the electrolytes that we need to actually hydrate our bodies. And so Element is a great choice. They also make seasonal chocolate flavors that are really good as like a hot chocolate, and you can put them in your coffee if you want, or just with hot water and like milk, or just plain. I like to drink them plain. I love Element. I have at least one pack a day. Electrolytes are so important, especially for pregnancy and breastfeeding. So if you're lacking your electrolytes, give Element a try. You can use my link, Drink Element. It's drinklmnt.com/TaylorK, and you will get a free gift with your purchase, which is a sample pack, so you can try all of the flavors. Again, that's drinklmnt.com/TaylorK. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I have a really super special podcast guest for you guys today. A lot of you are probably familiar with her. I am chatting with Jenny Urich, who is the founder of 1000 Hours Outside. So she is also a homeschooling mother of five. And the 1000 Hours Outside movement is a global movement designed to reclaim childhood. Along with her husband, Josh, Jenny is a full-time creator and curator of the 1000 Hours Outside lifestyle brand, which includes a robust online store, an app, and books. She also hosts the 1000 Hours Outside weekly podcast. A thought leader in the world of nature-based play and its benefits for children, Jenny lives with her family in the Ann Arbor area of Michigan. So today we are chatting about Jenny's new book. We are chatting about why it's important for kids to play outside, what the benefits are of that, and so much more. I think you're going to love this chat. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. Hi, Jenny. Thank you so much for joining us. Would you mind just telling us, for those that don't know, who you are and what you do?
That's such a big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, who are you?
Who are you? In 2 minutes, who are you?
I know. Isn't it a funny thing? I mean, I guess I would respond to that question with, I'm a mom, which is an interesting answer to a question. Also, I like to do cross stitch and I play the piano. So I don't know. Who am I?
I love that.
But I'm a mom. We've got five kids. And the reason you're having me on probably is because I founded this movement about a decade ago called 1000 Hours Outside, which is a movement meant to bring back balance to childhood between screens and real life. And it has been life enhancing for my family in a way that I never could have imagined, in a way that still works. We've been aiming to spend 1000 hours outside for the last decade when our kids were really little ones, and now they're teenagers. And so it's an answer that continues to work for our family and really enhances our day-to-day and also the kids' development. And I know if it's an occupational therapy, it's like, you know, all this play outside is so, so good for kids. So that's who I am. That's what I do. And I've gotten to a place where I really enjoy being a mom, whereas in the past I had really struggled. And what has really changed the path for us is this extended time in nature.
Yeah, I love that. It makes such a huge difference just getting outside. We do your challenge. This is actually our first year counting, and I have your app, and we're at almost 800 hours, and I'm really hoping we can make it, but we are in Utah, so it starts to get cold. That's the problem. Like in winters, it's really cold, and we're lucky if we get an hour outside. So it's tough, but I also have found that it's, for me, it's not even so much about meeting the 1,000-hour goals. It's really about being intentional about spending as much time as we can outside. Can we do school outside? Can, because we homeschool, can we eat more meals outside? Can, like what can we do our read alouds outside instead of, you know, just being inside for those things. So
Well, because it really matters. Because when you do those things outside, the kids are getting exposure to the full spectrum sunlight, and there's a surround sound of noise and the wind. I had talked to Angela Hanscom, who's also an occupational therapist, and she was talking about, she's got the book Balance and Barefoot, about how, like, indoors and kids would go in for therapy, they would like blow a fan in their face, and they're trying to get used to that feeling of wind and that sensory experience. So, you take your kids outside, well, they're having the exposure to all of these different sensory elements, even if it's just, and I say just in quotations because it's not just, but even if it's, like you said, we're doing our story time, or we're going to have our meal out there, we're going to play a game of cards. It really does a lot for everyone, including the parents.
Absolutely. Okay, I have to ask. You've been doing this for a decade. Have you always met your goal?
No, we haven't. And so that's a good question. We've actually been doing it for 12 years. I've been writing about it for 10. And 2 years into, like, we really changed our lifestyle. When my kids were little, I was like struggling. It was so hard. I mean, I thought it was going to be easier than it was. I don't think I thought it was going to be easier, but I was like, this is hard. And I remember coming home from the hospital with our first, and I'm like, he just cried all the time and he went to nurse all the time. Like, he wouldn't sleep. And I'm like, what is going on? And you're kind of used to, I don't know, I guess it depends on whatever age you have your kids, but like, I had a career and I was a teacher. So that's a career, right? That's a career. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a career.
Definitely.
It's a career. So, you kind of like you work your way, and I don't know, over years you get to be known, and the kids know you and the other parents and the different counselors and things, and you, I don't know, was mildly successful at it. And then all of a sudden I'm like flailing on a daily basis, trying to just like literally survive, I can't. I'm like, this one day, I'm like, I'm not surviving. And I just had such a hard time. And so what happened in our home is that a friend of mine had told me about this educational philosopher who happened to be from the 1800s, but she didn't include that in the bit of information, named Charlotte Mason, who said kids should be outside for 4 to 6 hours a day whenever the weather is tolerable. So hitting your Utah thing, or we're in Michigan, so sort of a similar thing. It's like it's not to as tolerable in the winter, but I know down south it's not as tolerable in the summer. So that was a really life-changing thing for me. I actually thought it was a silly idea. I thought it was very outlandish. Like, who does anything for 4 hours? Nothing can occupy a child's mind for 4 hours. And I was completely wrong. And we went to a park back in 2011 at the suggestion of a friend who had been reading about Charlotte Mason. I didn't even know anything about her. And that one day changed the whole trajectory, really, of our family's life, because I tell people it was the first good day I had as a mom. Like, I was like, I was not having good days. And then all of a sudden I had a good day, and we were like 3 years in. Our oldest was three. And so and we had two little ones too. So just getting outside for those expansive periods of time, it just changed the whole experience, like, of the day, of the development, of our happiness level, of our presence. And so over time, I started to write about it, because we would go outside for these long periods of time with some other friends quite often, and we just were never running into other kids. So it's been 10 years that we've been aiming for it, and no, there's been several years where we didn't hit it. Like, we had a baby, So I mean, we were like always in the 900s, but and truth be told, Taylor, it's like people will be like, they already hit it. They hit it back in June. I'm like scrambling to get it over the finish line, but it really is about intention. It's about, and it's about knowing, it's about having the knowledge that this is really an impactful thing for our kids. It's something that seems frivolous, but really makes a difference for their development and their lifelong success.
Yeah, absolutely. You've said before that, like when you were a new mom, you felt like something was off and you felt kind of unqualified. What do you think it is about the current culture that we live in and that we're raising children in that makes new moms feel this way? Because this is I focus on sleep a lot. And I think this is like a common thread in parenthood that moms feel inadequate. They feel like they have to, they don't have what they need to parent their kids. What is it? Why do you think that is?
I think we don't know anything. I think this is part, I think that's part of it. I really do think that's part of it. But I think that we're told that we know things. So, you get messages like follow your intuition. But then you're like, well, I don't have any intuition
Yeah.
because I don't know what I'm doing and there's no generational knowledge anymore. I
Yeah.
read a really impactful book called Hunt, Gather, Parent by Michelene Duclef. And that's sort of what she's talking in there. Like, parenting is a set of learned skills. And in certain cultures where people are more intertwined with each other's lives and they live together in a more cohesive way. You really see, like, you see what that person's doing and you see what the grandma did and you see what that aunt is doing or your friend. Whereas here we're so siphoned off. So, it's like you're getting this piecemeal of information. Like when our kids were little, I try to put them on a schedule. I don't know what you think about that being a sleep specialist. I don't know if you're pro that or anti that, but it didn't work for our kids
Right.
and it did work for other people's kids. And I think there's some individuality there, I'm sure, but it really didn't work. And so that was part of what made me feel like I was a failure because I'm like, well, this isn't working and but it's working for everyone else. And why isn't it working for my kid? And I had to make an adjustment. So I think because we have such a lack of seeing what other people are doing, except for in these very small snippets, like in a reel or in a short conversation or something. And you don't see this totality of how to parent. But yeah, we're given the message that we do know how. So then I think when it doesn't work, we can get pretty thrown off.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's more of that we've lost touch with our intuition too. I mean, I do think a big part of it is we don't have that wisdom. We don't have the wisdom from our mothers and our grandmothers and our aunts. We don't have most of us, some of us do, but most of us don't have those women helping us. And when we do, it's often very mixed. Like there are some grandmas and moms who did things one way and some that did them another. And so it's like, well, which is like the right way or the way that's going to work for my family. And then we're also kind of told that we need to like look to the experts for everything. And so it kind of, I think we're really conditioned at a young age to look to outsource our expertise. And we're kind of conditioned to like not listen to our intuition. So for me, I think that's a big part of it.
Well, I almost wonder too sometimes, like I think that sometimes there's no answer.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, well, this is just the stage that you're in. And there, I think we're desperately searching for an answer. In fact, today, down in our kitchen, because I don't know if this is how it is at your house, but at our house, like the kids like bring their toys to the kitchen and then they just leave them there. And I'm like, why are there so many toys in the kitchen? But my youngest daughter, we struggled with her sleeping quite a bit. And so I bought Taylor, I bought this $60 doll that like made breathing noises or a heartbeat. I don't know. It's like in desperation, you're trying to sleep and like it didn't work. And I think that that's part of it too. It's like, you're desperately searching for answers that maybe in certain cases don't really exist. And you just have to like survive through that part and then things change. And that's with a lot of different things, right? That's with potty training and that's with teenage hormones and that's with, learning to read and all the different things that happen during childhood. And so sometimes I
Totally.
think we're on a mission for something that isn't there. And so that can feel defeating.
Yeah, I agree. I think our culture has become so like scientific, which is cool. Like there's some great aspects of science. We get to learn things in a different way. But I think when we try to apply that to parenthood and motherhood and like humans, it doesn't always work. We want hard data. We want generalizations about how do we get our baby sleeping? What's the best way to potty train? How do we make them listen? And like the reality is that humans are so complex and dynamic, and you can't measure all of that. And there isn't always an answer. And sometimes things are just hard because they're hard, and because hard can be good sometimes. It doesn't mean it's bad. Good things can come from hard. I could talk about this all day, but I totally agree. Okay, so you wrote a book. Can you tell us a little bit about your book? And it's called, what is it? Until the Streetlights Come On. Can you tell
Yes,
us a little bit about
that's
it?
it. Yes, sure. So I was a math teacher. So writing is not like my go-to, right? But if you're passionate about something, that is a big way to communicate your message. And so actually for even though I wouldn't consider myself as someone that's like gonna head down a writing path, for about the last 7 or 8 years, I've had this title in my mind of a book and a concept called Until the Streetlights Come On. The subtitle is How a Return to Play Brightens Our Today and Prepares Kids for an Uncertain Future. And the premise of the book is that we can have a really good full today, and that is actually what is going to prepare our kids for tomorrow because our world is rapidly changing. So if you look at the careers that exist today, some of them didn't exist 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and the change, the pace of change has gotten quicker. So there used to be, you know, people talk about like a generational set of knowledge. You know, you would get a career at 22, you'd stay with it till you're 52, you have the same colleagues, and then you retire. And that knowledge base that you had lasted for a lifetime. Well, now things change so much that they say kids out of college or out of high school will have four different careers on average. So that means that they will have, some will have more than that on average in the first decade of life. And it's this pace of change has gotten so much faster. And so what we're looking to do is to raise kids that are adaptable, that are resilient, that are creative, that have grit, that have all of these qualities that you don't really learn at a desk. And so the way of yesteryear, I think, was very much like standardized testing and lots of information poured in. And the internet has changed that, and our world has changed, and AI and robots and all of these different things. And so I think that a lot of parents, and myself included, are, they feel pressure to like give up today for the sake of tomorrow, right? Like I'm gonna fill today with all these lessons, and it's gonna be drudgery, and we have to do this, that, and this in order to prepare you so that you can get a good SAT score and so that you can get into this college. And I like the world has changed. It's not that anymore. And the way that we set our kids up for a tomorrow that is successful for them is to give them a lot of time to be bored and creative and excited and all of those types of things. And that's what makes your life better as a mom, because you're not having to like drill the math facts. And you can also sort of join in this full life living, and everyone can have a better today that still prepares kids for tomorrow. So it's a message of hope. That's what the book is about, that you can do less and gain more through what used to be built into society for children, but no longer is.
Yeah, I love that. I love that message. I feel so strongly about this for children. I think that some people don't understand the importance of kids being able to just play, like in a way that's unstructured. Like so much of what we do as adults for kids is providing them with structure. And even in the school, they're sitting at a desk for how many hours? I don't know, 6 hours a day or something. And I think that a lot of people really think that is the best way to prepare them through textbook learning. Can you talk a little bit more about what are the benefits of unstructured play and specifically play outside? Like, what are some of these big benefits for our kids?
There's so many. The
Yeah.
list just keeps growing. And I stumbled upon it. This is not anything that I set out to learn about, but I just was in a spot where I was really struggling being a mom. And this time outside changed the whole situation, starting for me. Then I started to have good days and could catch my breath and felt more present and that type of thing. But for our kids, I really started to notice when we started to spend more time outside, all of a sudden they're getting sick less, they're happier, they're playing better, they're more talkative, they're showing off, like, I can do this, I can do that. So that took me down a path of learning that when we allow our kids to play, Peter Gray uses the phrase self-structured, which I think is actually a really cool phrase, right? Like he says, it's actually not unstructured, that there is a lot of structure to the play that kids drive themselves. It's just that they're structuring it. So I kind of really love that. But what's happening when they play outside? on a social level, is that they are learning how to negotiate, and they're learning how to compromise, and they're learning how to assert themselves, but not too much. And they're learning how to come up with something out of nothing. They're learning how to come up with rules. They're learning how to not offend the other kid so that that kid goes home and cries and the play is done. And all of that is coming from an intrinsic motivation because they want to play. It is not anything that has to be coerced. And so Dr. Peter Gray actually gives a really cool example in his book, Free to Learn, of like if kids are playing a pickup game of sports. And I remember this as a kid, like you'd play baseball in the field that's in your neighborhood that doesn't really have bases, or you make it up, you know, someone puts their hoodie out and that's a base, whatever, that you have to come up with this whole set of rules. Like, how is this actually going to work? And so what happens is that like the older kids don't ever hurt the younger kids. Like you don't have an 8-year-old that rams into a 4-year-old at home plate, because if that kid quits, then all of that work that you've put into creating this play experience is over. And so there's very few instances of injury in pickup games of sports, of self-directed sports games that kids do, as opposed to like youth sports culture. I think there's quite a bit of injury. So just really interesting things on a social level. And we're talking about kids having a bunch of colleagues and changing their jobs and changing careers. So it's really important what's happening there on a cognitive level. When kids move in complex ways, it enhances their brain function. Yeah. And it protects their brain function. So one of the statistics that Dr. Carla Hannaford gives, and she wrote the book Smart Moves, she's a pediatric occupational therapist, she's in her 80s. She talks about how elderly people who dance regularly have a less chance of developing Alzheimer's and dementia. 76% less chance. It's a wow. huge number. And the point is, and she talks about it throughout our book, but when kids move in ways that are complex, it really is affecting the neural wiring in their brain. And when kids have time and space to play outdoors, nature facilitates this expansion of skills. They can climb higher, they can run faster, they can jump over the roots, they can try and climb the fence. All of these different things are things that are enhancing the actual wiring in their brain, not to mention the vestibular sense, which is activated when kids' heads are out of an upright position, which I'm sure that you know and have talked about. Mm-hmm. But that's what kids naturally do, right? They're going to rough and tumble. They're going to roll around. They're going to do somersaults. When we were kids, we always went down the stairs with our hands first, head down. That's how we went down the stairs. It's just like what you did. Yeah. And your body does that because that's helping with your development. And so there's a whole lot that's going on cognitively. Physically, there's a whole lot going on too. It's like you got this ring around your eye that never relaxes, called the ciliary ring. It's always tensed. It's always in, like if you like would to tense your bicep or whatever, that ring is always tight except for when you go outside, and then your eye can like relax. It doesn't even relax when you're sleeping. So it's like, you know, we have kids that are developing myopia. Like there's issues with the eyesight. There's issues with the eyes working together. Kids have core strength issue. They can't sit at the desk and do the worksheet. So there's a whole lot going on for our kids in a whole lot of arenas that deal with their whole self.
Absolutely. Like when a parent asks me, I need to teach my four-year-old or my 5-year-old to start writing. I'm like, no, you don't. You need to go get them outside. Cause like, I think a lot of people don't see the connection, but I mean, you just listed so many amazing benefits, but the play is the school. The play is the learning, especially for these really young kids. It's the foundation, provides the foundation for then going and learning. I love that. I'm so passionate about that. Okay. Can we talk for a minute about screens? Cause this can be like a tricky topic. I'm wondering, and I think I heard once, correct me if I'm wrong, that the idea for 1,000 hours outside was actually because, did you see that like on average kids spend 1,000 hours?
There was a couple of things. I mean, it came a little bit out of that. It was really a 3-pronged thing. Came a little bit out of Charlotte Mason, 4 to 6 hours a day, whenever the weather is tolerable. And that for us ended up being about 18 to 20 hours of outside play a week on average for us in Michigan, kind of like Utah, more in the summer, less in the winter. But that was sort of the situation there. And then Angela Hanscom, who wrote this book, Balanced and Barefoot, she says that all kids of all ages, so that includes your newborns, I mean, maybe not like right when they're newborns, but that includes your babies. And also it includes your teens, that the ideal amount of time outside is 3 hours a day, minimum, minimum. But what's interesting is she talks about, and this is the truth, it used to be woven into the fabric of society. So it wasn't, I mean, for people who aren't spending any time outside or very little, that seems like a huge number. But when I was a kid, we had three recesses, and the recesses were 45 minutes. And so that was most of it right there. It's a good chunk. We walked to school, it was a mile. So just in that school culture, we were getting a fair amount of time outside.
Which, by the way, sorry, Angela was actually on my podcast. So if you're listening and you're really interested in this conversation, this topic, Angela was in season one. So go back and listen to that episode.
I mean, go back, seriously. Go back and listen,
And her
because
book is great.
I think her book is a must read. That's what I call it. A must read for every family, for teachers, because you have to know why the play is important if you're going to insert it into your life and into your schedule. And if you miss it, it's a pretty big swing and a miss. It's a big miss. And that's what's happening. And we're seeing the result of that, I think, in the lives of children all around us. So yeah, it came from her 3 hours a day, and then also at the time, kids were on screens for 1,200 hours a year. That was the average. So it was just really a thought. It was like, well, we spent about 1,200 hours a year last year outside, and I remember thinking, not that we're against screens, but I was like, what if that 1,200 hours had gone to screens? Like, how much less of a we would have so much of a more lame life. Like that, there's so much fullness in the simple things. It's not like we were doing anything extraordinary. We had really little kids, and we live in Michigan, so it's like flat and kind of boring. But there was so much life lived in those 1,200 hours. And so the message for us has always been like, our kids need some balance. We are really out of whack here. The statistic at that time, and I'm not sure if it's still the same, but it was that kids are outside on average for 4 to 7 minutes a day, playing freely, 4 to 7 minutes, and they are on screens for 4 to 7 hours.
Wow, that
So
is
we're off.
mind-boggling.
We're just off. Not that, like, I'm like, do you have to throw out your iPad? No. But also, 4 to 7 minutes versus 4 to 7 hours, that's kind of a mess.
Okay, so what advice do you have for the parents who maybe their kids are inside most of the day, maybe they have a lot of screen time? How do parents get started with this if outside play is not something that their child or children spend a ton of time on right now?
Okay, we got started with one day. That's how we got started. 1 4-hour day. That was the commitment. I thought it was going to crash and burn. I met a friend at a park from 9 to 1, and we brought a picnic lunch. That's how we started. So I think it starts with a one chunk of time outside. Maybe that's on a Saturday. Maybe that's after school and you stick around and you have your dinner there and you bring a picnic. I think that the key is, especially if your kids are not used to playing outside, the key is that you have to do it with somebody else. Because what that does, beyond safety, right? It's good to have another set of eyes wherever you're at. But what that does is it provides that play environment that really is missing for kids. So there's a really good book, Taylor. I'm not sure if you've read Playberhood by Mike Lanza. So he's got this book, it's a good one. He's got this book about how, like, the neighborhood used to be the happening place, right? Like, you would go outside and you would go knock on people's doors and you could see who would play and you'd already see people would be out there. And he said, and I thought this was really interesting, that, like, even if you take away your kid's screen and you tell them to go outside or go find something else, he's like, there's nothing to entice them out there anymore. There's not like a horde of kids out there ready to be played with. And so I think that as parents, it's a pretty tall task. Sometimes we have to create that. And that is the thing that really entices the kids and allows them to fall into those play experiences that they love. Angela Hanscom is clear, though, that it can take some time. She said it can take up to 45 minutes for a kid to figure out how they're going to play, what they're going to play. She calls it a play scheme. So, and longer if they're not used to it. So I also think we have to be ready for, like, I'm bored, I don't know what to do. So I know we just always say, like, I know, I trust you'll figure it out. It's okay to be bored. Just kind of like statements that try to just bring down the tension and show that you trust the kid. But I definitely think Friends are the way to go. So, you know, you can meet up at a playground, you could go on a short hike, you could go for a walk around your block, but maybe trying to schedule in an hour, 2 hours, because sometimes it takes that length of time for kids to really dive into those benefits.
Yeah, for sure. And I've noticed that with my own kids. And we actually, I kind of create rhythms, like seasonal rhythms around our day for when we're going to be outside and when are the kind of the times that we're more likely to be indoors. So in the summer, we're outside first thing in the morning because it gets really hot in Utah. That's the other thing. It's really hot and it's really cold. So we have to make the most of our time. So we're outside for like 3 or 4 hours in the morning. And in the winter, it's kind of the opposite. And we even like kind of sometimes change our school schedule a little bit, which is the, you know, a whole nother topic. That's a great thing about the flexibility of homeschooling. But sometimes like we have, it's known in the summer, morning time is outside time. I don't care what you do, but it's going to be outside. But sometimes my daughter who is six will complain, I don't want to be outside, even though she usually loves being outside. So I wonder what you do in this situation. Cause I usually just say morning time is outside time. You can do anything outside. You can bring your coloring outside. You can bring your books outside. You can bring your Yoda player outside, but it's outside time. But then I'm like, is that the right choice? Maybe I should just give her more freedom and let her come indoors. But I know she's not going to be outside later because it's going to be 100 degrees and she'll be complaining that it's hot. So I wonder what you do in those situations and what tips you have for like complaining about being outside.
Well, I think a lot of people complain about being outside, myself included. And a lot of people just assume that we like being outside or that our kids like being outside, and they don't. I think that outside is hot or it's cold or it's buggy or it's humid or there's too much sun or you're in the shade and now you're cold. I mean, it's just one of those environments that's unpredictable. And that actually is what makes it really beneficial. It's helping our kids to develop resilience. So I would be doing the same thing as you. Like, this is just a part of our rhythm. We're outside and I would stick with it. But, you know, I do think if a kid is really upset, it's like, well, are there, I mean, can you invite a friend over? I mean, not always, right? But I do think that is really what changes things. And I guess sometimes there is an expectation that, because I do get a lot of messages like, my kid won't play in the backyard. But I'm like, that's really not how play used to be. It used to be like there was a lot of freedom to it, a lot of roaming, a lot of options for kids to play with. And so I don't think it's abnormal for a child to get sort of bored out there, depending on the environment, depending on if they're just with their siblings, which is how it is for us a lot too, right? Like, you're homeschooling, your kids are with their siblings, and they're kind of like, I'm sick of this person. So I do think they eventually find what to do. But yeah, we have a goal. So I'm like, we're going for it. This is part of our family rhythm. And I think that just because a child complains doesn't necessarily mean this is a bad situation for them. It actually, that discomfort and those types of things can really help them with their development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Okay. So what about for the parents who have really young kids and they have to be outside with their kids? Like, I'm in a phase right now where I can watch my kids from the window and kind of be in and out of the house doing cooking, cleaning, whatever I need to do. But I know that just kind of started for me because my son is 3 now and his older sister is 6 and like she kind of watches him. But like last year, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So I know that for a lot of parents, it can seem really daunting. Like, when am I going to do my cooking? And when am I going to do my cleaning? I can't spend all this time outside. What tips do you have for those parents?
Okay. Well, I would say, listen, 3 hours is not that much.
Yeah.
You still have a lot of your day. So you have enough time to cook. You may not have enough time to clean. So part of life, like we talked about at the very beginning, is this is seasons and you have to make your choices. And I will say this, your kids are 6 and 3. My kids are 15 down to 7. And I used to think like, this is going to get so much easier as they get older. And it does get easier on a physical level. You're not having to carry everything. You're not having to carry them. You're not really having to deal with tantrums, like all of that sort of unexpectedness of toddlers and little ones, that changes. But what happens is your kids start to have a life of their own and your life gets really busy with taking them to see this. They want to go see this friend. They want to get a job. All of these things start to change, you know, 13, 14, 15, and there's never really a perfect time to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you got to do it in the season that you're in, I think. But if you've got little ones, and you have to go with them, which that was my life for probably about a decade, try and look at it as a gift. That's what I think. I used to be really annoyed because when I was a kid, it was like people locked their kids outside, and that's just not what people do anymore. And there's no kids out there to play with anyway. So it's really changed. So I used to think like, oh my goodness, there was these moms that they didn't have their kids inside all summer, all day long, because they locked the door. But as I've gotten older and I guess looking back, I'm like, you know what, Taylor, I've got like 10,000, 12,000 hours of time spent with my kids together. We have all these memories. And I think that when we live in a world that's so technology heavy, we need it too. I need that outside time too. That's helping to reset my rhythms. It's helping my own mental health. So I feel like at the beginning, I looked at it in a way where I was kind of annoyed, but in time, I've realized that this is actually a gift because I'm forced to be out there with these kids too, and I also really need it.
Yeah, I love that. It's just about a perspective shift. And I think the one major thing that I love about spending time outside is it forces me to like be off my phone. And that's hard for some of us too. Like we talk about screen time and kids being on their screens, but like a lot of parents or adults are on the screens, on the phone all the time too. And like I have a job where, I'm a content creator and everything's virtual. And so it's just right there at my fingertips. And getting outside just like gives me the motivation and the opportunity to really unplug and say, no, like this is my intentional screen-free time with my kids. And we all need that. And our kids need that from us. So,
For sure.
okay, I have one more question for you. I'm really curious about this. I've been cu curious about this all year because we've been camping a lot this year and we have a pop-up camper. And when I'm plugging in my hours on my app, I'm like, okay, do I count the time that we spend sleeping? Like we're in a tent, but it's everything zipped up because it's really cold outside. Do you count that time? Because if so, I'm gonna go add that time
This
in.
is okay. This is our most common question and many variations of it. So people are always asking what counts. So there are no official rules. That's what I tell people. But people, they want me to be like the arbiter, I don't know,
Arbiter.
whatever. Yeah, they
Yeah.
want me to decide for them. I'm like, I'm not going to decide for you. But I will tell you that we do not count the sleeping time.
Oh,
I would
bummer.
have counted, like if we were outside for the day and a 3-year-old falls asleep for a nap, like I would count that. Because they're napping and it's in the fresh air and blah, blah, blah. But no, we
Yeah.
didn't count nighttime sleep in our time outside. But also, like, do what you need to do. But, like, also, someone just asked me, like, what if you're, in an indoor pool, but there's windows up at the top? Or, I mean, like, I don't know.
We're
No.
trying to get in those hours however we can, Jenny.
But
Everyone
listen,
counts.
yeah. Hands-on living is great. Camping is great. All of those things are great. And if including those hours helps you to, feel better about the whole thing.
Yeah.
It helps you to stay motivated, then do that. But we don't count them.
I have to tell this story. I was having a really hard day once, and I think it was winter time. And so it was really cold, and I was like having a tough time with my kids. And we like went to Costco, got home, the trunk was open, the doors to our minivan were open, and my kids and it was in the garage, but the garage was open, and my kids just wanted to play in the minivan. And I was like, "No, like you don't need to play in the minivan, go play outside." But then I was like, "You know what? I don't have the energy to deal with it." And I was texting my friend, and I was like, "You know what? I'm counting these hours towards my
There you go.
because they are
There
outside. They're in the van, yes, but the doors are all open and they are getting fresh air, and I am adding these
Yes.
hours."
And Taylor, there would be people that would email me about that. They would
That
be
is
like,
so funny.
"Dear Ginny, if I am in this specific situation, should I count?"
Oh,
So
that
I don't
is
know. My
so
friends are like,
funny.
"You should charge people for your answers." Like, I will tell you, but it's going to cost you $1.
Like, yeah, like coaching for consultation services. Does this count as outside time? But really, it is about the intentionality of it, not the actual, like, not all of the hours that you have to get. And it's so specific. But well, Jenny, this has been great. Can you just tell us for those that are listening that want to know where to find you? Can you tell us where to find you, where they can get your book, what other re
Okay,
if you have
it's
any
all
other
boring.
resources?
It's all very boring. It's all 1,000 hours outside. So our things are
Easy.
1000hoursoutside.com, and the app is the 1,000 hours outside app. So that type of thing. On our website, we have these tracker sheets that are free to download that are super fun, and people can fill their hours in like pen and paper if they're interested in that. People put them on their fridge, they blow them up, that type of thing. So there's a lot of cool things on our website. The book, Until the Streetlights Come On, is available wherever you buy your books. But if you buy it from the publisher, it's cheaper. So our publisher is Baker Books, so bakerbooks.com. And depending on if you buy it like before or after the book comes out, I don't know when this is going to go. It's on sale. And it's a little bit better of a deal beforehand. And then, but it's still on sale there. It's like a cheaper option and they ship for free too. So like, you know, you can get your books on Amazon or wherever you buy your books, but it will be available a little bit cheaper at Baker Books. And I think that's all. I can't really think because everything is just 1,000 hours outside.
Yeah.
So
and
there's
you have
really
a
no
podcast.
Variation there. Yeah. I mean, it's called the 1,000 Hours Outside Podcast.
So, and it's
there
a good
we
podcast.
Go. Consistency.
When does your book come out?
It comes out mid-November. So it's really
okay.
A cool one
so it's
for
out.
Holidays.
It's out. Okay. By the time this is
it's
published,
already
it should
out.
Be
so
out.
This is,
yes.
This is our, or, so it's yeah. Already out. So if you go to Baker Books, it's 30% off with free shipping. So that's a pretty good deal. All the time,
yeah.
I think. I don't know. I don't know if it's in perpetuity, but it's definitely for a while. And, you know, I think it makes a good gift. Like if it'll fit in a stocking or for a friend or a teacher or your daughter, you know, if you're like a grandma, you want to give it to your daughter and she's, you know, she's got young kids or something like that. So, I think it's coming out at a good time of year.
Awesome. And I will put all of that info in the show notes as well. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jenny. It was so great to talk to you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge with us.
Thank you so much, Taylor. And thanks to everyone who listened to the end.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please subscribe and leave a review if you feel called to. It really helps our message reach more parents. You can also follow me on Instagram at Taylor Kulik for similar content or visit my website at www.taylorkulik.com. I offer online courses where we really dive into infant and toddler sleep holistically. And we also offer one-to-one holistic sleep support services if you're looking to improve your child's sleep or shift patterns without sleep training. If you know a parent who would benefit from this podcast, please share. And if you'd like to financially support this podcast to allow me to create more episodes more often, you can visit anchor.fm/Taylor Kulik. I hope you'll join me next time.